News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Sean in for Dalton this morning. Had a quick shift change there, about 6:15 this morning. Dalton, get better, buddy. It's 7 after 8 o'clock on Mobile Mornings. We'll get to, you can help steer us along here this morning. Probably going to start out internationally talking about what the United States did over the weekend in Venezuela, the anxiety of Greenland, and maybe members of NATO and the European Union. And starting in Venezuela, Sean, your first reaction when you, I mean, we saw the military build up around Venezuela. Did you think it was going to lead to something like
yes.
what we saw?
Mm-hmm.
You did?
I mean, remember I started talking, a month and a half before, stories out of the Military Times, where it showed the assets being deployed to the region.
Yep.
And when you had the USS Gerald Ford going yep. in, all the, you know, the whole strike group that's going in. I was thinking, okay, drug boats and this doesn't seem right. And I said, back then, this is about projecting strength to China, right? This is,
yeah.
So we're going to go there and move those assets there. It's not just for the drug boats. So, I mean, to say did I see it coming that night? No, of course not. Am I surprised that we got to this point with Venezuela? No. I mean, why? The amount of, because if that carrier group is there off the coast of Venezuela, it's not somewhere else
sure.
projecting power,
yes.
right? I mean, there's, I mean, that's a big commitment.
I would agree.
It's not just moving a couple ships.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, I mean, so.
Well, I thought it was about the oil.
Well, yeah,
but
it is.
But I didn't know what was next. I didn't see. You know, I didn't know that was
okay.
Coming.
Well, I mean, there are three things. I was talking about this with Troy Carrico yesterday on the midday show. Drug boats, drug traffic, one thing. And that unsealed document by the prosecutors up in the Southern District of New York shows, I thought it was interesting, the allegations made by the prosecution weren't just corruption the way a lot of us would understand it. Like, hey, I'm going to pay this government official to look the other way as mm-hmm. I run the drugs. I'm going to do, you know. It was almost like a co-op of them working together.
It was
the
like,
government and the cartels. Like, it wasn't, and I guess maybe this is lost in translation, what I'm trying to explain, but it wasn't just the hey, I'm going to give you money and you be cool. It's going to be like, hey, we're partners.
It's like a corporation. Like
they were partners.
They had a playbook.
Yes, and this is how it worked.
That was the first thing that struck me, Sean, when I started investigating on the depth of the corruption. You know, we know of corruption. We know what the word means. There's corruption even around us. We get that. The level of corruption in Venezuela, the depth of it all from the law enforcement to the judges to the military. You've got all these very general heavy military and they're all getting mineral rights, you know, just making money. They put nothing back into the infrastructure, so that's they just kind of ghettoed their way around it. they just turned it all into a money-making for a number of people, mm-hmm. and then the country would be damned, pretty much. That was my thought when Maduro was captured. I'm like, well, if you're going to – all that's left to talk to are also people just as corrupt as he is. And then I saw – and I think if you're going to – I guess if you're going to take the one of two ways to go about it, if you're talking about a deal, and that's how Trump seems to run international affairs,
mm-hmm.
if you're talking about a deal, you've got to deal with the people that are there. You take Maduro and you prosecute him. The others you know are guilty and bad people and have done bad deeds, but you say to them, I think this is what Trump's doing, is like, all right. I know what you're all about. Don't cross me. So here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to do it from this point on. So it's almost like a bully is bullying the bullies, the bullies in Venezuela. The people who get shortchanged in all of this, obviously, to this point or in the short term are and have been for 25 years are the citizens.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got that part of it. You've got the oil part of it, which give Trump this. He says the quiet part out loud.
Out loud.
And then to have his sidekick for the moment, Lindsey Graham, going, "Yeah, that's right. We're gonna get the oil."
Well, Lindsey, of course, oil.
He famously, Lindsey Graham will say, I mean, because he wants us. He's like John Bolton. He wants us to go to war everywhere.
Yeah.
And then he's also. But like Ukraine, he's like, we got to get that mineral. We got to get that money. We got to get the mineral. We got to get that oil. At least they say the quiet part out loud.
Exactly. First to speak off script on Ukraine was Lindsey Graham.
We're going to get those minerals.
Yeah.
And so you got the oil portion of this, and we'll get to that in just a second. I have a suggestion here. If they're listening at the White House, you want to make sure Republicans win in the midterm.
They do every morning.
You take the money that you're getting from, we're going to get this oil. We're bringing this oil. And I said, you get that money. And use that to defray people's cost, the uptick with the Obamacare subsidies expiring.
Then two birds, one stone.
But so the oil thing's there. And then the third thing, though, the big thing is this realpolitik that's going on about showing China that we will project some power down there. As China has moved into the region, as we have moved into Asia, the mm-hmm. one thing, I mean, this is why it's maybe frustrating to look at stories to me that are one-sided, because I don't like China's projection of power.
In our hemisphere.
Yes, but we also tell them not to project power in their hemisphere, in the Pacific, and we also project power in there. So I'm an American, so I'm on our side, but I do realize that but China's been trying to, and successfully to some degree, getting inroads, getting people to owe them money in Central and South America, building infrastructure in Central and South America, doing these things. This was a flex of, hey, this is actually our backyard, China. You better be aware.
We have a China story right in our own town out at the airport with the Continental mm-hmm. Situation where they were trying to expand their campus by, I think, 100% or so. Had to do with the housing project there that China and you know, I mean, that's property of the People's Republic of China, I guess. So we can't let them expand in areas around airports and things like that. Okay. It's just interesting that we, right under our own nose, something like that was going on.
You talk about the crane equipment at the port. This stuff comes up, and we were so integrated for so long, for decades, with taking things from China because, I mean, the price was right.
Right.
So, I mean, people weren't doing it to say they're either wanting to sell land because these people are the highest bidder, or I'm going to buy this product because this product is the least expensive for my company.
That's right.
They weren't doing it like, oh, I need to make the Chi-Com successful, but they were going, oh, there's a deal there or the deal over there. On the oil side, too, there's a lot of things that give me pause and worry here. And we'll talk about Greenland and the rhetoric about Greenland. And by the way, this is not the first time the United States has tried to acquire Greenland. This is like... from Seward, back in the day, the guy that got us Alaska, to today, there have been multiple attempts for us to get Greenland to be part of the United States or some protectorate thereof. So what President Trump is doing is it's not unprecedented. I'm sorry for all the people on MS Now or whatever, but the rhetoric about the military thing, I'm not crazy about. But on the oil thing, this is something that gives me pause. Here's what Reuters says. You probably heard the story yesterday. The United States was attempting as of yesterday to seize a Russian-flagged oil tanker that was being shadowed by a Russian submarine after more than a two-week-long pursuit across the Atlantic as part of the U.S. blockade on Venezuelan oil exports. So you have a Russian-flagged oil tanker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and we talk about how you can be flagged for whatever. I mean, ships can be flagged for different countries, but this is a Russian-flagged oil tanker. This is Russia doing business with our enemies as well.
Right.
But they got a Russian submarine that's right there alongside.
So it's being escorted. Being
escorted with that. And we are, the United States, trying to enforce a blockade and seize that ship. That worries the ever-living crud out of me. That's like if Tom Clancy's looking down from heaven, he's like, I should have written this one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going on as well. So, I mean, how far do we go with this?
That sounds pretty far.
You know, and if you take, you might say, well, that's embargoed oil, but is it our job? I mean, this is the frustration for some of us that support so many things that Trump did and has done, is that the idea was coming into it that we're not going to be putting our nose in every foreign entanglement. And this is... sure, for the good of the United States, but does it come with a bigger price? That's a worry. Maybe you don't worry about it. I'd love to hear from you on the text line or on the phone line at 251-343-0106. But how far do we go with this? You know,
It's a good question, and there seems to be a price to pay for the anxiety alone. I mean, Trump makes decisions. To this point, I'm like, okay, I thought very nervy of him to do what he did in Iran, but it worked. And it took out to at least for a couple of years, I think we've...
And listen, these things, I mean, we're talking about not getting in foreign entanglements. You look at the track record here. We got Iran, Nigeria, Venezuela. If all of them just stop there, then that is projecting U.S. strength without getting us into a war. But true. And Trump says everything. He gets, you know, he's going to... When reporters say, hey, do you rule out military action? Of course you're going to say no. I would hope. I mean, I enjoy that from a president who's not going to say, but to then go, but we are going to secure this. Like, that's just rhetoric. And it's good to keep people on their heels. But when we say we could use U.S. troops to secure the oil in Venezuela, what? The boots on the ground?
Yeah.
Is that what we thought we were getting?
No.
With President Trump? I don't think so. Maybe some people did. But I the idea of projecting strength in those ways, and then that's the thing, it's air power of whatever. But if it's like, yeah, and then we're going to go down there and put U.S. troops in there to secure the world production, have them in theater in Venezuela. I want to hear from y'all. Y'all are different on this, but I'm not crazy about that. I'm over this stuff.
Well, I think that's the point. It's like, I don't know if it's my appetite, like I'm filled up, therefore the country should be filled up.
I think there's a lot of Americans that are filled up with it.
And like I say, I think he's got a pretty good track record of getting things done, quick strike done. The Iran thing was phenomenal, taking out the nuclear reactor, right? And no one thought it could be done. People were very hesitant about it. He'll pull the trigger on stuff. He will strike. One more thing about Iran. Let me get your opinion on this. So as America does what it does, and it may or may not mean much in Iran, but I think it probably does. If you have a population that's very aware that America's being a little hyperactive in Venezuela. And beginning to call some shots there and taking out her. Well, it's not going to be a nation rebuilding, but we kind of took out the regime with Maduro now in a Brooklyn jail. How old is the guy in Iran, Khamenei? It's got to be 88.
80-something. Yeah, I was going to say 86.
Isn't there
a
population that's – and there's been some, you know, upheaval, whatever you can have in Iran. You better be careful.
They definitely are protesting. And you talk about – people here in the United States protest, and that's one thing. You protest in Iran,
yeah.
You've got some stones.
You do.
You got some stones. You protest against that because you get disappeared real fast. I mean, remember the Green Revolution? Obama was in the presidency, mm-hmm. And you know there was a chance for Iran. Because I want Iran to not be a theocracy.
I do too.
Okay? I just want Iranians to do it for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Not us.
Yeah. That's where I am.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, are we getting closer to the point where Iranians would do it for themselves?
Well, one of the two things is going to happen right now, because they are a full court press going on right now in Iran. They are shutting down these protests, and they realize that the people keep coming out, even though there have been killings and disappearings of those protesters, they keep coming out. They're going to press this. If this gets out of control, they lose their power. So we're about to see this. If they're going to be so strong to shut down the protests, or if not, you probably will see a change.
And that's something. A lot going on for sure. And I'm trying to keep up with it and keep my head in the game and continue having appetite for this kind of rhetoric and these kind of actions, but it's not always easy. 8:21, Dan and Sean, and we'll read your text coming around the corner.
Getting your morning moving. Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Owig.
Yeah, you talk about people fleeing Venezuela on their own. Why wouldn't you? Mentioned this the other day. Under Maduro, the economy has shrunk by 80%. You know, we get a little upset at the price of hamburger meat here in the U.S. And then, you know, inflation has been problematic. An economy that shrinks by 80% in the last 15 years or so. That's crazy. Oil production, one-fifth of what it was at its peak. And very little investment into the production, so it's all done.
Which is crazy. You have that land there. You talk about, you know, gross cures all, you know, with like a business. So you run that country. When Jay Young was on the show with me, Texas oil guy comes on.
I heard him this morning on this. He was on with Gordon Deal.
So Gordon Deal stole him from me. I had him on Monday, and then Gordon got him on. But yeah, so Jay was. If you go back and listen to the podcast, we're talking about the production. And this idea, and he made the joke about, you know, like the TV show Landman. He said they can't go drill the wells right away. You need to have, he said, the fact that they drilled six wells a day on Landman. He was laughing about it.
But, right.
But he
flag
said,
on the play.
Yeah, but he said, you know, you could get this, they could, if they just doubled, we talked about the money, if they just doubled production, and you'd know, be socialist country, this, yeah, socialist country, let's say you're a socialist leader, but you've taken the state, has taken over these oil production companies. You have a reason, though. If I want to stay in power, I mean, just think about it this way. If I want to stay in power and I'm there, then I'm going to try to have the most jobs and money for the people at that level, that socialist level. So if I double oil production, that's more money. I can still skim some off and make – why wouldn't you do that? I know they're selling the drugs and all that stuff going on, but why wouldn't you say, okay, I got this drug money coming in over here. I mean, like, take morality out of it for a second. I got this drug money coming in out of here. We're killing people. We're doing these things. But I'm going to increase this oil production. I'm going to make sure my people get checks from this increase. I'll double. I'll triple it because they brag about the reserves.
Yeah.
So I would have moved to produce more oil. I wouldn't have sat on it. Because I could take that money. Why are these countries in the Middle East so very, very wealthy? It's all based on that oil production.
Right.
And they can give people very high standards of living. Then you get to be the socialist, totalitarian.
Call your shots.
And taking your drug money. But you got a little, you know, bread and circus for the people. And they stay happier. And they're not eating pets to try to survive.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, take the morality out for a second. Just think about trying to stay in power. Why they wouldn't have done that has left me scratching my head. Jay and I talked about it. Like, he said it would be absolutely doable if we, not in a day's time, but, you know, in 6 months, a year, or 25 years, they've had to do it to increase that production instead of letting it come down.
Could the U.S. play a role in that in some way, in some sort of big brother way?
That's what
way?
Trump's saying. It's like, you know, hey, we're going to go get that oil and get them producing. What I'm saying is just back, rewind.
For them, yeah.
Why just greed? No, but the greed would be to stay in power.
Well, I know, but...
And you could stay in power through the totalitarian measures. At the same time, if you got a little cash coming in, you double, you triple the oil production into this government-owned system... You give money to the people, and then they're like, ah, you know what? We love Maduro. He gives us the money, you know? We're good.
It's like, but they're operating with a different mindset, and it's got to be based on greed. It's
being an oil-producing country is like a kid with a trust fund. Yeah. You don't have to, I mean, if you screw up 1 month, you're going to get a check the next month. If you have this product, you just have the check.
I would compare Venezuela more to a bonus baby, a high-paid athlete.
Yeah.
And you see... You're 23 years old. You've now got $100 million. That's never going to go away. And it does because of the way that your lifestyle from that point on.
But maybe to stay with your analogy, but if you choose not to go shoot up people at the club,
yeah,
right, then you keep the $100 million. Isn't it worth not shooting up? Then you
it's worth it, but do people do that anyway?
Well, I don't know.
It is 8:30 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Sean in for Dalton this morning. Hopefully he's getting fit and back and ready to come back tomorrow.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Mobile Mornings at 8:35. On your Wednesday, time to check in with our buddy, just about one exit up from where we are, airport and I-65. Up on Dolphin Street, it's McConnell Automotive, and it's Louis Arata. Good morning, Louis.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing just great. You're right around the corner from us, and I know it's a busy place. And I know you just have a lot of people that come on by there because they get online. They see what you've got on the used car lot, and they can do that at McConnellAutomotive.com.
That's right. In a new car lot, we're trying to get – we've got a few 25-model pickup trucks on the new car side, around $13,000 off. So you're looking for a deal. We got a few 25s left from last year. 26s are already here. We got deals on those too. Used cars, we got a great selection. You can check everything out online. Like Dan said, on McConnellAutomotive.com. And like I said, we have a great selection. Got low interest rates now going on. And hey, it's going on here right on Dolphin Street.
Had some fog this morning, and that can lead to fender benders. So if your car suddenly doesn't look like it did when you got up in the morning, it's now a big old dent there, or worse, you've got the body shop to take care of that.
That's right. You can call them back there at 251-476-4141. Ask for Rachel. She usually answers the phone. She'll take care of all your needs and try to set you up with a loaner car. But we got it, like I said, one-stop shop here right on Dolphin Street.
Sounds good, Louis. Thanks a bunch.
Hey, thank y'all. Be careful out there.
You got it. Louis Arata, McConnell Automotive. And find out all about him online. You know where, obviously, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right. We get to the text line here, and a lot to get to. I want to read Michael's here first. Michael says, keeping the population poor is the best way to control them. It's the same idea LBJ had with the social welfare system for blacks. Okay, what you're missing, Michael, is the difference. You want to control people, you give them enough, just enough, right? That's what we're talking about here. In Venezuela, they don't have enough. You have, I kind of, what I'm projecting there that, you know, once again, this is not moral. This is just, you know, the idea of how they would have stayed in power.
Yeah.
I'd increase oil production to make sure I had that safety net for the people in Venezuela, where they had the food they needed and all that. Once again, I don't want the socialist system. I'm just trying to understand the logic of how they let Venezuela go.
Right.
Because remember, they got the trust fund of all that oil. So, and they let that production drop. So if they doubled it or tripled it, which is not inconceivable. My conversation with Jay Young, I mean, this guy does this stuff for a living. He joked, once again, it's not going to happen overnight, like in Landman, but they could produce it. Then you have that social safety net, like Michael was talking about, and the people will stand with you, right or wrong, because they're going to get some basic needs met. So that the fact that they let it go so badly that the people, at a certain point, people could get will get in such a point where they're so poor that they will rise up.
Sure, they got nothing to lose.
You're still going to keep the heavy hand of totalitarian government, disappearing people, killing people, threatening all those things. At the same time, you would conjure goodwill by this money, and look at this, we are the people of Venezuela, and this is our natural right, and you're getting money back because of our oil production, and it's a brave and honorable job to go to work in the oil fields and do that's how you spin it. I'm not saying this is right, but that's how, I don't get why they let it go as badly. I mean, socialism will fail, okay, but it has the trust fund of the oil money to prop it up. And they didn't go that way with it. I mean, you still keep your drug money and all this. I don't know how they got there, but I mean,
well,
they did it. And
they got there the way people get to places, that one bad habit at a time.
Yeah, but it's, once again, it's just, they're not having to create new industry. You know, socialism stifles any kind of innovation and people wanting to break out and do things for themselves. But if it's given the amount of money, the reserves they talk about in Venezuela have, you could have propped it up for a long time, and they didn't. So
no, they didn't. I mean, it's that country is in shambles, and you talk about the heavy hand as the people as their lives got worse and worse. What went on with security and with policing? It got heavier and heavier. To keep them down, because they were more apt to uprise as things got worse.
Correct.
They watched all this happen in their lifetime.
That's what I'm saying.
There.
If you would have given them a little bread and circus here, It would have made it easier to continue to have that totalitarian rule. It's not really super important to this whole discussion. It's just something that's
interesting.
It's been bothering me that it's not like a country that didn't have resources.
Yeah.
I mean, they could be sloppy with their spending with the amount of money in oil that they have. And they let the production go down. I mean, if I'm the totalitarian leader of Venezuela, my number one job after I report to the cartels every day is going to be to, what's our oil production today? What are we doing?
Yeah.
Because this gives me money into the government for me to, you know, just continue to run a socialist country, which is failing, but I'm propped up by this influx of money from oil.
Also, the fact that they are in our hemisphere. Mm-hmm. They are people. Well, I guess they're not. It's not an English speaking country, but there's a lot of things that we can relate to with the Venezuelans. Not that they're going to church every day, but it's a Christian nation, basically.
Plenty of, and I know, you know, a family here that moved from Venezuela, moved to Mobile back when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they left early on when they probably were getting the sense that things were going the wrong way.
They're relatable. I mean, there's relations that we can have with that country we can't have just idea-wise, value-wise, with the country in the Middle East.
100% agree.
So that's where there can be communication from this point on.
They're just folks, yeah. They're just from a different place. They're just born in a different place.
Yeah.
But their system is very similar to a Western. Yeah, it's a Western system.
Yeah.
Except it's been socialist and that happens when you let the socialist uprising comes from the fact that the lower classes there weren't getting their needs met, to use some goofy term, and so that uprising happens. So now you're the socialist leaders, right? You're Chavez before, you're Maduro now, and you go, okay, the uprising that brought me to power was the people didn't have enough, they felt they didn't have enough, and we had to rise up to get the People's Party, right?
Right.
Then I'm going to continue to stay in power by using this oil money to give the largesse.
Mm-hmm.
Picture the communist-like drawings of the people working in the oil. I'd have spun all that stuff, you know, to stay in power, but they didn't. It's like I said, it's not actually even germane to the discussion anymore, but it leaves me scratching my head. Unnamed texter said, stabilization of the petrodollar, oil is sold in dollars. Of course it is. Listen to Midday Mobile, we talk about it a whole bunch. The move has been these BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, to move away from the dollar, trying to get oil traded in something other than dollars.
Right.
We set up in 1950s, and it's been one of the... It's been some of the octane in the gasoline of our republic and its success. So, yeah, there's a move to break away from that as well. I get that. But this is – whether it's sold in dollars or crypto or rubles or – it doesn't matter. If you have all this money coming in Venezuela, you can be really sloppy. They were so sloppy. How about this? They're so sloppy that they couldn't even make it work with – money pouring in from oil. By the way, I could answer this just privately, but Chris in Orange Beach, so our dads work for the same company. He said, hey, did our dads work for a company owned by China? So both of our dads work for Teledyne Continental.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris and I. That was 2011, Chris. So my dad was out before the Chinese purchase.
Oh, wow.
So he was out before then.
Okay. Derek is on the line two. Would like to talk this morning. Good morning, Derek.
What's going on? Just like a piece of my whole little neocon argument that I don't necessarily agree with, but you look at it, might makes right. The Western Hemisphere is ours. The problem that, you know, I think a lot of American people have is that from all the wars that we've had, nothing has came back to the people.
Nope.
I don't think, for as narcissistic as a society that we are, if we went into Iraq, okay, bring the gold and home. Bring the gold and oil home to us. Soldiers of fortune. You know, we've never gotten anything except a tax bill for all these wars. Now, if you told me that we're going to go to war with Iran, and you'd be honest with me and say, look, we're going to war with Iran, we're taking their oil, and that's going to, you know, we're going to bring it back, and your gas is now going to be a dollar. You know, we're going to go into Venezuela. They've got, you know, what, $17 trillion in oil. They've got another five. I think if you go through the mineral list of what they've actually got, I mean, they've got the oil, they've got the gold, and you're going to say, we're bringing that home. And guess what? If you want to go over there and fight, we're going to give you a crate, and we're going to have cargo ships, and what you can carry, you can bring back home. Look, I said this before. We're no different than doing anything but Rome and Carthage. Okay, let the people have something. I don't want Lindsey Graham to get another damn penny. He's rich enough. Give something to Quan and Pritchard. Let, you know, the soldiers we got here, we don't even have to have trained. You take this, you take the guys from Chicago and send them over there. We have an army. They may not be able to aim very well, but we have an army. You send it over there and let them bring the riches back to America. None of this is making it back to us. But if you're able to sell it, like the whole Greenland thing, hey, I don't care. I agree. Yes, in the Arctic. What do I get? That's it. I'm selfish. I'm a father. I don't have the luxury of morals. Tell me what I get out of it.
You know what?
If you're going to tell me I'm going to die, huh?
Derek, here's my spin, too, is I think, I was telling Dan this morning, if you take the Venezuelan oil, if we're just taking it and not paying for it, bring it back to the United States and sell it, let's take those dollars. If the Republicans want to do well in the 2026 in the midterms, take that money and use that to prop up the ACA,
the
Obamacare money, and the people had their insurance rates go up. Have that money come in and say, here you go. We went and got this money
tangible,
and we're gonna
everything's free. Everything's free. Everything's free.
I'm not really crazy about this, but this is okay.
I'm not either, Sean. But, I mean, if you look at what we've done, and what he said is that we're going to take, we have no money for the people with insurance. We have no money for this. Our infrastructure.
But we have money to go bomb places, and we have money to go. I don't, you know, that's the problem. People get frustrated. Like, Iran's a threat. Yes, we agree Iran's a threat. At the same time, getting somebody motivated about Iran being a threat when they're worried about their health insurance,
right?
Their premium's gone up that much.
Look, let's get some of that defense ETA. Let's get a little bit of that Raytheon stock. Let me get a little bit of Halliburton stock. Yeah. You know, we could create a national trust fund. And just walking down the Western Hemisphere, that's ours. You know, without question, that's what you're saying. I told you, you know, the wars that are coming, this is it right here. So that's ours. Bring it back. All this stuff, we don't have the money. And at the same time, I'm so sick and tired of hearing that we're the richest country in the world. You know, are we? Because it certainly doesn't feel that way. If you want to bomb them, that's fine. I've got no problem with that. You know, that's them. I need cheap underwear. You know, so you
Captain
know, take
Nihilist.
It out on them.
Captain Nihilist, Derek, I appreciate
it. Hey, that's the American way of life.
Yeah,
the older we get, the more cheaper underwear we need, Derek.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank
you. I'm sorry, I'm broke.
Thank you for your call and your passion. We appreciate that.
The yes, it's I wanted and Summerdale Tony had said. It suggests that they need security down there. They hire folks like BlackRock that want to make money and leave the U.S. troops out of it, like do mercenary.
Yeah.
So
that's basically former U.S. troops.
Yes.
What a BlackRock would be.
I don't know. If we're going to do that and pay with it. And you're talking about, not BlackRock, probably you're talking about Blackwater. I'm guessing. BlackRock is the big investment company, but he's probably talking about Blackwater.
I know what he means.
I do Mr. Prince's company. Let's see. This Jason says, if this anti-Trump, anti-leadership mindset always existed, what would our map look like today? Would we have Hawaii and Alaska? You know, I think that's interesting, too, because it kind of plays into what I was going to say earlier. This is not the first time we've made a run at Greenland. I don't have the problem with fiscally, I have the problem with it, but constitutionally, I don't have the problem with making an offer to buy Greenland. I'm going to complain about it because we don't have money
to do it.
We need to pay our debts.
Yeah.
But it's the military part, you know, and that rhetoric that bothers me. But he mentioned Alaska, so that was Seward's folly, right? Remember, Seward was panned for what we paid for Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there should be a statue to Seward in every other state in the nation.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he did pretty good on that.
And 50 more in Alaska itself.
Yes. So, but I mean, Seward was one of the people that also had made a play at Greenland. This is not the first time
I didn't know he did.
Yeah. So this has been, let's see. So back in the 1800s, you had William Seward, fresh off the purchase of Alaska from the Russians in 1867, floated the idea of buying Greenland and Iceland from Denmark. Oh, Iceland in the... Man, can you imagine Iceland? That's on my to-do list.
Iceland's nice.
Yeah.
Iceland's a place to go.
How do I say this? There's some pretty people. And
there are pretty people in Iceland,
and,
yes.
But it said, so then in 1946, then-President Harry Truman offered the Danes $100 million in gold for Greenland, and Denmark rejected the bid. So what President Trump is doing now is not, when the people say this is unprecedented, it's not unprecedented. We've tried it before. I think the issue right now with him saying, but we're not going to rule out military action. I understand that when we're dealing with like enemies, when you say we're not going to, I like that. The President Trump doesn't go, they say, would you rule out? No, I'm not going to rule out. I like that. I like that attitude.
I don't want to come to Canada.
But we're talking about Greenland and
Canada.
Stuff. Just say, hey, we want to buy it. If we make a deal, we'll make a deal. If not, don't say, well, we might have to take the military. Come on.
Well,
with that.
That's where a lot of people, Trump goes right. Other people are a little bit like, yeah, okay, I don't want to, I don't think that rhetoric is necessary.
I'm good with the president to like sometimes the whole thing, but a lot of times it'll be, man, until the last sentence, dude, I was with you. Mm-hmm. Just leave that last sentence out.
Last sentence is in all caps. 8:51. We're going to talk with Jeff Poore, see what he's got lined up with his show straight ahead.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Heading into the Jeff Poore Show. At 8:55, Jeff comes on a little after 9 o'clock. I prayed this morning, Jeff, that you did not keep the little guy up to him, expose him to Auburn's heartbreaking loss at the buzzer last night.
No, he made it to halftime. That was the deal. It is his fifth birthday today.
You know? Oh, wow.
But he did not have to endure the suffering of the long suffering of Auburn fans last night.
How did he take the news this morning? I'm sure he asked about it.
Not too great. I think he goes to bed. We're up by 16, and you get the 31-6 run there by Texas A&M, and that sort of does it for you.
It's amazing. So he took his little boy up to Athens this weekend, Sean, and sure enough, they lose in overtime to Georgia. Though the pictures that I saw afterwards, he seemed to be in a pretty good frame of mind.
Well, yeah, and well, we did fun things in Atlanta on Sunday, and it was a distant memory. he is very excited about Stone Mountain. We went up to Stone Mountain.
I've never been there.
I like it too.
Yeah.
So it's funny. So this morning let him open up one of his birthday cards from his grandparents, and there's a $5 bill. It's very exciting.
Sweet.
And he tells me that he wants to take that $5 bill and go back to Stone Mountain with it. So that left a lasting impression going up the top of that mountain.
Wow. Wow. Is it like an amusement park? What do they have to do there?
They have like a little, you could go up the top of the mountain on like a gondola.
Yeah.
But, and if you so choose, you can walk up and down it. But there's also a little theme park with trains and shops and things like that, too.
Okay, let's look at your guest list this morning. I know among those, you got Jared Hudson, U.S. Senate Republican candidate, hopeful. He's among your guests this morning.
Joey Clark coming up until the 10 o'clock hour. And then tomorrow I'm going to dip out early on my show. I know I've been missing a lot of radio lately. But I got to moderate a forum tomorrow for the Eastern Shore Republican Women for U.S. Senate, U.S. Senate Forum. And so we'll have Judy Barlow and Melinda McGee on to kind of tease it, what to expect tomorrow and talk about that.
Yesterday, I know that you were down at the beach at a conference. Is that right? Where were you?
The Forestry Association, yeah. There was a lot of forestry discussion up until the point of Todd Stacey, Grayson Everett, and Jeff Poore on a panel just bashing AL.com, basically.
Oh, so, I mean, it was almost like you were on the air.
Yeah, I mean, it exactly was like I was on the air. I didn't tell these lawmakers, like, look, guys, it's the Alabama legislature. This isn't House of Cards. Don't be scared of us in the media.
Did you at any point ask them, hey, my buddy Sean Sullivan wondered when pine timber price is coming back up?
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't really give me that opportunity. Okay.
Yeah,
it was supposed to be Will Ainsworth, our moderator, but he had other things going on, and we got his, I think, deputy chief of staff, Connie Rowe.
Forestry Commission having their conference in the one place in the state where there are no forests.
On January 6th. On January 6th. Yeah, that's like the beach on January 6th.
It's, yeah, thanks a bunch. And Jeff will get you going here in just a bit. Jeff Poore, the Jeff Poore Show on the way. Sean, thank you very much.
Hey, no problem. See y'all at noon.
8:59 on Mobile Mornings.